Let's do this. Let's read 401 through 407 together. We have to vote on them individually, but they're all very much related to the same type of program. So we'll read them all, we'll take testimony on it, and then we'll vote on them individually. 401 to 407, if you could read those items, please.
401, approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program for Block 290 KOTI Apartments, located at 1417 Northwest 20th Avenue. 402, approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program for Pettigrove Apartments, located at 2216 Northwest Pettigrove Street. 403, approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program for Southwest Stark Plus Columbia Apartments, located at Southwest Park Avenue and Southwest Columbia Street. 404, approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program for 3rd Avenue, for 3rd and Ash, located at 108 Southwest 3rd Avenue. 405, approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program for Atomic Orchard Lofts, located at 2510 Northeast Sandy Boulevard. 406, approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program for Block 33, located at 125 Northwest 4th Avenue. And 407, approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program for Woody Guthrie Place Apartments, located at 5728 Northeast 91st Avenue.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. So if you could just give us a brief overview of this tax exemption program, what the qualifications are, why they have been awarded to these particular projects, that'll probably answer a lot of the questions that people may have. Then we'll take some public testimony, and they have more, may have different questions than those, in which case we can bring you back to answer them. But if you want to take a stab at some of that.
Excellent. My name is Dori Van Bockel. I'm with the Housing Bureau and the coordinator for the MULTI program. The Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program is a 10-year exemption that is provided on development projects within the city of Portland in exchange for additional public benefits that wouldn't necessarily be included in the projects. And primarily, that is affordability. So all of these projects have additional or have affordability at either 20% of the project limited at 60% of area median income over that 10-year period, or 80% of area median income, and it depends upon the market rents for that type of the type of units being provided in the building. So based on the area, the size, the amenities, et cetera.
So you give a 10-year tax exemption, and then how long does the affordability last?
With these projects, it's the same 10 years of the period of the exemption that the affordability lasts.
Thank you. Great. So why don't we take public testimony? You can go ahead and have a seat, and if there's further questions, we might have you come up again. Mr. Walsh?
Please don't stop the time yet. Just for clarification, I'm requesting that we do each individual one instead of the group, or you can agree to whatever objections that I raised in 401 will go to all of them, and that would be on the record.
That is correct. So we're taking testimony
on 401. That's right. I don't want to waste your time because a lot of it is going to be repetitious. However, they are individuals. We do have a right to 3 minutes on each one. So we're willing to give that up if the record shows that whatever objections we raise on 401 will also be incorporated into the rest of them.
Is that agreed? Yes, agreed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Again, it's a little complicated because I don't have my notes. So what I remember is that the first one, 401, and correct me if I'm wrong, is 80%. They're taking a percentage and lowering some of the apartments. All right, so you have studios, you have one bedrooms, you have two bedrooms, and a lot of these developments or extensions. Some of them are extensions. Some of them are new. Some of them are 80%. Some of them are 60%. So when we were looking at it, we said, you know, the income for Portland is now rated at $73,000. make $73,000. Really don't. I'm retired. Don't make it. All right? So if you take 80% of that, you're still in the high 60s. I'm doing my math correctly. So what does that have to do with low income? Nothing. These all have nothing to do with low income. Somebody like me who makes on retirement $35,000, somewhere around there, I can't qualify for these places. So what does that have to do with our problem? We have a problem with people on the street. We have a problem with people hanging by their fingernails, asking for help. And you know that because we sub help them with their rent. We give them money so they don't get thrown out on the street. And we help them on the street. And we build shelters, emergency shelters that last for 40 years. Did you ever know that emergency shelters would last 40 years? Salvation Army's emergency shelter, how old is that? About 40 years. And they say, we've been doing this for 40 years. Ladies and gentlemen, lady and gentlemen, you are giving millions of dollars in tax breaks to these guys over a 10-year period. It's about $5-6 million. For what? For people that can afford $60,000, get $60,000 as a base? Why are we doing that? And what money are we using? Are we using the House's money for that? Are we using federal money for that? What kind of money are we using? Or are we just writing it off? And you know when you write it off, 10 years down the line, you say, oh, it's only 10 years down the line, man. Just write it off. No, it comes from someplace. It comes from somebody's pocket. So, those are our objections, and we demand, not 80%, we demand 40%. That would bring you still into 38,000, somewhere around there. That's reasonable. That's reasonable. You're not being reasonable with the taxpayers' money, and you're giving tax breaks to your buddies in the millions. Millions. Can you hear me, people?
Thank
millions.
You. Thank you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog. One of the things I want to have maybe a more clear understanding on these type of projects is that when these projects are rolled out to the public with these type of tax benefits, I also want to see how many jobs are going to be created per each project. I want to have an understanding of that. I want to start hearing that on every project we talk about. How many people are going to be employed? How much are we going to end up paying all those people? I want to start hearing that more and more. I want to start seeing the actual square footage of the units, which is, I think, very important to establish what the market rent would be on looking at other locations. Again, I want to have an understanding on the materials that are going to be bought on these projects, what the dollar amount will be, different type of materials purchased. I want to have a clear understanding all the benefits that will happen throughout this city because of these projects. We don't normally emphasize that on the jobs created, who's going to be employed working there, who's going to be employed working there thereafter, the benefits of the people renting in these projects. I want to have a clear understanding of the jobs created. It's a very important issue when you're talking public benefits and subsidies that are going toward these projects that we don't emphasize on when people say, I don't like this. I want to know how many people are going to be working.
Lightning, are you talking about the construction jobs primarily?
Absolutely. That's
and there's a precedent for that. When we got the stimulus money back in 2009 or something, and we had shovel-ready projects, remember, that we put the Obama stimulus money to?
Right.
We had to track the economic impact.
Okay.
And that was a precedent.
Okay, and that's why I think that's very important to do that. Issue number two on these, when the people do not follow through with the program, I assume they have to pay back that money. If they, for instance, do a sale in 5 years, I assume that program ends, or can it be extended to the new buyer? That's just a question I'm throwing out there. And again, just my understanding on the, just from hearing from some developers in the marketplace, there has to be more incentives to create more inventory, plain and simple, if you want lower rents. Now, people are looking at the rent control. They're looking at the inclusionary zoning, which, again, if the developers are saying they're backing away from certain projects, we have to readjust to continue to have rapid development of new properties out there, which will begin to drop the prices in the overall market. If you do not do that and you limit the inventory, the rents will continue to go up. People will not be able to live within the urban areas, and it has to be adjusted to where they want to keep building these type of units, which does add employment throughout the community. So I approve all of this. I'm just at more inventory will reduce prices. So that's my position. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning.
Hi. My name is Mary Seip. It's nice to see you again.
Thank you.
I want to hit on a little bit of the population that this program addresses. Every time we hear conversations about affordable housing, and there's a huge segment of the population that doesn't get addressed, and that is people like myself who are over 65, people like myself who are can be deemed disabled, who are living in this type of housing. Just to give some clarification, 60% of FMI, the building that I live in, a single person cannot make more than 50% or 60% of the MFI, which means for a person like myself, the maximum amount of money that I can make in order to continue to live in the housing that I live in is about $24,000. My Social Security is about $19,000. So just because that's the ceiling, it doesn't even mean that people make that much. The building I live in, there are over 200 income-restricted units. The majority of the people that live there are like myself, people who perhaps during the recession like myself, due to corporate reorganization, lost their job, lost their home, lost their car, lost their dignity. And without this, we would have no place to go. We will be the next people sleeping on the sidewalk. We need to support as many of these programs as we can. I'm so sorry.
It's all right, Mary.
As you can tell, this is a very serious problem, and we're overlooking a huge segment of the population that is going to be on the street. And so every program that you can put together to increase the number of affordable units in our city is critical. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you, Mary.
I'm just going to telegraph to the staff. You've previously testified, what if people then start getting back to a higher income, and do those folks have to move out of the affordable unit? So I'll ask that to staff after we've heard all the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you ever so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for clarifying, because there's a lot of confusion, unfortunately. You know, I've come to find out that affordable housing has its own language.
It does.
And it is not helpful. So these MFIs, it depends how many people in your household. And it's a threshold income. So, for example, you mentioned that in your situation, you know, it's $24,000. I don't have the 2016 data in my head, but I remember the 2015 data for a household of one. It was about $30,000.
Right.
So that's the maximum threshold.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean the people living there make an income of $30,000.
Exactly.
And so, while I'm on a tear, there was a really good question asked, well, what is the source of funding? It's not tax dollars coming out of current tax proceeds, it's foregone tax dollars that those projects would generate. In other words, if the projects aren't built, there wouldn't be any tax dollars anyway. So we're foregoing 10 years of some percentage of tax collection, an exemption, in exchange for making that project work as a non-market rate building. Because right now, if you're developing a project, you want to develop market rate housing and go for the top end. So we're actually buying down the affordability in those buildings by providing the tax exemption. The question was asked, what if we sell, you know, what if somebody buys the, you know, sells the project 5 years in? That's actually a very common scenario. The tax exemption and the affordability stay in place regardless of who the owner is. So that's done in stone. So, but thank you, Mary, for your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioners. Charles Bridgecrane Johnson. And indeed, the whole MFI household size thing is problematic, and it's not really resolved when we go to the individual breakouts for these items. I know that it's a little bit, you know, frustrating to hammer on this because we've passed inclusionary zoning, and the agenda item coming up is going to talk about changing the procedure for this to a 5-year rolling cap. But I think that public sentiment also needs to be addressed in that. Are there any developers who go beyond a floor of 20% units? You know, even though they don't get additional tax abatement, and, you know, I can understand why there isn't, but I hope that when we move on from this into the other item, we'll talk about incentivizing and, you know, just positive reinforcement for developers that, you know, are settling for the last good dollar instead of squeezing every last, you know, red cent out and making sure that these, well, we designed these smaller studio apartments that, oh, look at that. They don't have washer-dryer connections, but the studio departments on the other floor have washer-dryer connections and 10% more square feet or something like that. So I don't know if we really get into that. The other, the most critical issue, though, is when we look at two of the specific properties, one is at 3rd and Ash, and I can't believe you're going to approve it without calling it the Voodoo Donuts Palatial Estates. And the other is that the proper name for all these places got pushed out to 91st, deep south, 5728 91st. All these places would have better marketability if they were all the Woody Guthrie Estates across every quadrant of Portland. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And just to answer your question, when it comes to private sector development, as a practical matter, you can get down to about 30% MFI through, you know, various incentives, tax abatements, and all that. Below 30% MFI, you're really talking about government housing, and we do that too. And so the bond that the public just supported creates $260 million for all manner of housing. Below 30%, it's really nonprofits like Proud Ground that you've heard in here, Habitat for Humanity that you've heard in here, some of the neighborhood
based. Reach and Hacienda also.
Exactly, exactly. So, and then the kinds of things Commissioner Fish was talking about with Bud Clark Commons and some of the other permanent supportive housing options. Those are typically government nonprofit place.
Was there any language in the bond to addressing particular, like everybody under 60 MFI, or is that still something that's hammered out through the process?
50% of the apartments are for people at 0 to 30.
Thanks very much, Commissioner.
So deeply, deeply affordable.
Yeah. Thank you. Good conversation.
What item are we on?
We are on 401-2407, so we're taking testimony on all of them together, but we have to vote
on them. So we'll make our comments on the first one, Mayor?
Yeah, that's probably the way to go. So, Commissioner Fritz?
Could I have staff answer that question, please? Which Mary Seipert said in an earlier hearing that there are people in her building who continue to stay at the low-income housing, but they have done well, got jobs and purchased homes elsewhere, which they're then renting out. So is what happens for people who start out qualifying and then are taking up space that somebody who is at lower income could move into if they have the means to move out.
Yeah, specifically within the multi program, there is a provision that allows someone to have their income rise in place up to 20% over the maximum limit. So if it's at 60% of area median income, they could earn up to 80% of area median income, and it would still be the rent would still be lower, and they would be considered an eligible unit within the building. Thereafter, they would need to either resume paying market rent for that unit, and the owner would need to provide another unit in the building as affordable, or the tenant could choose to move on to something else or another opportunity. With that being said, there are other funding sources that have different requirements, such as the low-income housing tax credit program. And so if those are also sources involved in the building, they may have other ways of treating that situation.
And are the tenants required to give in their annual income tax statements or some way of verifying?
For any of the affordable units, there is a compliance program. Like with any of the direct funded units in the portfolio for the Portland Housing Bureau. And so each year, both the tenant's income and the current rent, including the utility allowance, is reported to the Housing Bureau to monitor.
Thank you. And then if there's something that seems out of compliance with that, is there a system whereby other tenants or somebody could anonymously complain and ask for an investigation?
Yes, of course. Absolutely. And there is there's guidelines as to how we would deal with any project that's out of compliance, allowing them to cure it with the goal of ultimately maintaining the affordable units and bringing it into compliance. But if a project weren't able to meet the requirements any further, then there is also a penalty, and the full taxes would be resumed as well.
And I remember we've seen those come to council. So presumably somebody could call information or referral 823-4000. They can also be connected with that system.
Great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great. Here's what we'll do. Why don't we call the roll, please, on 40?
Excuse me.
Commissioner Fish, did you have a question?
Can I get them?
Call the roll on item 401?
Fish.
So, Mayor, I'm going to give my comments for all of them just on this one so we don't repeat ourselves. I appreciate the conversation, and the question that I heard, a recurring theme, was, are we investing? Thank you very much. Are we investing enough money in the kind of subsidized housing which is most urgently needed in our community? And so, and I'll just put that in context. Independent study was released recently saying we're short just under 2,000 units of what's called permanent supportive housing. Permanent supportive housing is what you need to take someone who is in mental health crisis on the street, who's been chronically homeless, and give them a fighting chance of being a successful tenant. In other words, you have to give them a home and intensive services. And without them, without the services, often it's not a successful tenancy. It tends to be a little more expensive because it has enriched services that attach. And the best example of where we've had success, and I think Commissioner Saltzman deserves a bow on this, is when we made a commitment as a city and a county to greatly reduce the amount of veterans who were homeless. And we had a very friendly tool then. We had something called a VASH voucher, and that was a federal voucher that provided a subsidy for the home and services. And that's why we were quite successful. It is, after all, a program we don't want to see the federal government retreat on. And interestingly, the only bureau, only agency of the federal government that is not subject to sequestration is the Veterans Administration. So we have some hope that those programs won't be cut, even if they're across-the-board cuts. So to the point that was raised, though, about are we investing limited tax dollars directly or indirectly in the right kind of housing, my answer is no. The people who live on our streets are not eligible for the kind of housing we're funding today. People living on our streets, the poorest of the poor, people struggling with addiction, mental health crisis, they are people that if we don't increase the supply of housing of 0 to 30% of median family income, and heavy on the zero because many people have no income, we're not going to be able to house them. So that's not what this housing is targeting. We have over a dozen funding sources, and we could spend all day describing the patchwork quilt, and no one is here defending this Byzantine system. But since people asked, I think it's important to say that each program meets a different need in the community. So the Section 8 voucher, which is the largest housing program in the state of Oregon, goes to very low-income people. And typically in our community, they are older, more likely to be a person of color, and more likely to have a disability. So when you hear that the Section 8 program may be cut under this administration, those are people, to the point of previous testimony, who literally don't have a better option. Those are the people impacted if you scale back the Section 8 program, the largest housing program in the state of Oregon, funded by the federal government. We also have money we spend out of urban renewal dollars, and we've had lots of hearings on where TIF dollars go. By council rule, they can only be spent on people earning 0 to 60% of median family income. So that's, from my mind, that's a better slice. We have direct and indirect programs. Today we're talking about, as the mayor said, foregone revenue. We don't put a property, we don't collect property taxes on the building. Is this the most efficient way of getting housing? No, in two respects. One is the subsidy is quite rich, the foregone revenue. And number two, this is workforce housing. This is not low-income housing. This is housing for people that are entry-level workers downtown. This is housing for my daughter, entry-level workers. This is but and it's important that there be housing for folks in workforce, but we are always going to be asking the question, where should the last tax dollar go and where's the most compelling need? My own view is we're still out of whack and we don't invest enough money where the crushing need is. And you say, well, okay, you either agree or disagree with that, but here's the consequence. If we don't house the poorest of the poor, we'll spend much more money dealing with all the consequences of that policy choice. Because the poorest of the poor are dying on our streets, are getting primary health care through emergency room services, are having interactions with fire bureau personnel and police in ways that were never contemplated. And the whole system is not designed to meet their needs. So we can make these choices, but let's be clear, we'll end up paying a lot more in the long term. And so that's why I believe we should be spending more of our money with the county addressing people who are in poverty, because it's going to cost us a lot more if we don't, and I think it's morally the right thing to do. The reason I will support the applications before us today is that it turns out this housing crisis is impacting people across the income ladder. And if we don't have workforce housing or housing for working class people, then shame on us. They're also being negatively impacted. And the one thing about this program that it has that I think is very positive is these are generally buildings that are going up in areas that are desirable. And we call it opportunity, but they're desirable. And I think there's something important about 20% of the units in a nice building in a desirable area set aside for people that are being priced out of our city. So that's why I will support it, even though it doesn't address where I think is the crushing need, and it's not the most efficient way to get there. But it is part of a solution. Thank you for the presentation. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm very supportive of these multi-applications before us today, and I think it's noteworthy to look at this from sort of the 30,000-foot level. I think we have more multi-applications before us today than we had in the entire last year, perhaps, or close to. So it shows that affordable housing, you know, we lack 25,000 units of affordable housing, and we need to have all cylinders working. And the multi is an important cylinder. It's not the very low-income people, but I think, Mary Sipe, I appreciate your testimony today. I'm sorry Joe Walsh wasn't here to see you, because you're not the rich fat cat that Joe Walsh makes out somebody to be who makes less than 60% income. It is working people, it is poor people. And we have an obligation as a city to work, as I said, with all cylinders working. That means direct subsidy where appropriate for very low incomes. But for 60, 80% median income, we need to be working with the private sector to marshal their forces to build, as Commissioner Fish said, in good opportunity areas, desirable neighborhoods, where everybody should have the right to have access to jobs, parks, good transit. And that's what these multis are about. So I really am pleased that we're here at this point, and I know we're going to make some changes to this program in just a few minutes that even make it better. But we need everything. We need inclusionary zoning. We need direct subsidies. We need the multi-program if we're going to really be serious about meeting our goals of affordable housing for the residents of our city. So this is great, and thank you for the good work. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you very much for your good work, and thank you for the testimony on this. So as Commissioner Fish said, this is workforce housing for as 80% of median family income. There are there's the one project, which is 45 units with nine below 60%, which is families working on minimum wage. And that's in one of the nicest areas. It's at 22nd and Pettigrove, so I agree that it's good when all kinds of people can live in some of the nicest areas in our city. And this is what we're approving here is 770 total units with 167 workforce affordable or really affordable. And thank you to Gordon Salazar, who wrote this up for me and figured all that. Last night I was at a fundraiser in Southwest for the ASSIST program. It's run by Melanie Kelvin, who is a longtime collaborator, and she helps people with disabilities get on social security and disability. And I can't quite remember the numbers from memory, but it was something like 30% of people who apply to directly to the Social Security Disability Program, only 30% of them get through after 6 months, and sometimes it can take up to 3 years with multiple applications. The ASSIST program, which is a non-profit, specializes in doing this, and they've got over 400 people onto SSI with like a 74% success rate after six months, which is phenomenal. And I was just happy to know that this program that helps the government to get people the benefits they deserve, because it is benefits that they deserve, and that's why they are called benefits. And I appreciate that program. It's the ASSIST program, if anybody wants to look into it more. Thank you very much, Mayor, for your dedication to this issue. These 770 units is certainly going to add some capacity in our housing system, and I hope that helps. Aye.
Thank you.
Wheeler.
I yield to Commissioner Fish.
I want to just acknowledge something that I neglected to mention and thank the Mayor and the Housing Bureau, and it flows from something Lightning and Charles Johnson have both raised in the past.
Thank you.
In the record before us, in each of these items, there's an Exhibit A, and I know, Charles, you saw it. Lightning, I believe you saw it. This is the first time we've had a comprehensive impact statement attached to these applications. The impact statement not only sets forth the unit types, but it also has detailed descriptions of public benefit. And Lightning, you had testified earlier about what's the benefit and what's the public getting for this. There may be things we want to add to this, but this impact statement is a long time in the works, and Mayor, I think this is a giant step forward in transparency, and I thank you for adding this to each of these projects.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. I appreciate it. And I just want to go back to what Mr. Walsh and Ms. Sipes said earlier. We talk in this language about housing, but we're really trying at all levels of affordability to ensure that we have the proper amount of housing that fits different situations for different people. And while we typically refer to this income level, 30 to 60 or 60 to 80, as workforce housing, we can't forget the fact that Portland is actually aging as a community. We hear a lot about hip young people moving to Portland, but the truth is we are aging. And a lot of our honored elders are people who are on fixed incomes, and they have spent their lives working hard in this community, and they deserve to live out their years in this community with safety and dignity and to be able to afford it. So that is another consequence of this kind of a program. I vote aye, obviously, and the application is approved. If you could call item 402 the roll, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The application is approved. Next item, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The application is approved. 404, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
It sounds almost musical, doesn't it? Aye. The application is approved. 405, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
I just want to note that although we're speeding through these votes, each one of them represents a lot of work at the staff level to check out the project and put it before us, so thank you again for that. Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The application is approved. 406, please.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The application is approved. And 407, please.
Fish?
Matthew, I want to echo what Commissioner Fritz just said. A lot of work has gone into this. And again, these impact statements are terrific. And thank you. I know it's a lot of work. Also, colleagues, just a reminder, we're one of three bodies that has to approve these for them to actually have the force of law. The county has to approve a multi-program. And ultimately, the county assessor, who is an independent actor, has to agree to take these projects off the tax rolls. So there's three levels of accountability in order for any of these projects to go forward. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
I love the comment about the marketing on this particular project. Woody Guthrie, place aye. The application is approved. And I believe that